I think we'll go ahead on the workshop now. I think a couple other people will be coming in later. Helene and I have discussed in moderate detail the content of this workshop, and we have interacted over a period of probably a year, wouldn't it be, Helene, relating to certain of the issues that are related to the feminist movement as it relates to our NAV ministries. Helene's involvement has been both personal and has been related to the Navigators, and has been involved in a lot of counseling that has come her way because of her stature as a woman and her contribution to the women's ministries in the context of the NAVs. And so as we have worked for several months just in interacting on what would be the content of this and to whom it should be pointed, we felt that most of the women have already heard a portion of this, although you're welcome, Patty, but that we should do something to make the men in the Navigators, and particularly in the community ministry, aware of some of the issues and how it will impact on their working with both wives and with single women in the context of the community, and particularly as it relates to evangelism. But secondarily, it's having much more of an effect on our Christian gals than any of us realize. So it's been from that perspective that we have come. I think you should realize that all of us have differing viewpoints, and a lot of what has been done in this area, the reaction to the women's movement, may have come from some who are very right. But Helene is not coming at it from that perspective. Helene is coming at it from a biblical perspective, and I believe bringing into balance a lot of things. And so she will share with you today things that are controversial, things that many of us have just said, oh, it doesn't matter, just stick to the Bible and go. And the fact is, it really does matter. And we may not see it fully because we live in an insulated context. Many of us do. And therefore, I feel that many of the issues that Helene is going to share today and bring to our attention will have greater impact than most of us are really willing to admit down the road. And what we're talking about is not a political issue, but a biblical issue. And she will point out a number of things. She will recommend several books, which I have seen the majority of them. I have not read them, that come at it from varying viewpoints that you can read to self-educate yourself if you run into that particular situation. Now, I think Helene's approach to this is very, very biblical, and that it comes at it in a very balanced perspective. And we have interacted, as I say, over many, many months on many of these issues. And I think she is well read plus biblically founded, and that God is using her in this area. And so I have, without really any qualification at all, I believe that you will get something today that will both be a little disturbing and will perhaps move you to some action and will be biblically founded. The format of today will be that Helene will share for about an hour. Isn't that right, Helene? And there will be a lot of content. You're welcome to ask questions as you go. She may defer some questions to the end, at which I will moderate a discussion, question, and answer time. So with that viewpoint, let's go to prayer for just a moment and ask the Lord to bless our time, and then I'll turn it over to Helene.
Last week, I was asked to speak at a sorority house, and our conscientious little navigator, who was trying to talk the president into inviting me, told her that I was coming, that I spoke against the ERA. That was one of the things that I did. Well, that's what the girl picked up. So she introduces me as coming to speak to these 40 girls on the ERA, against the ERA. Well, I almost dropped. So I stood up and said, my first love is Jesus Christ, and I'm here to speak about him. If any of you would like to come afterward and discuss the ERA, I'll be happy to do that. And the thing that finally dawned on me is the impact that we as Christians can have if we are current on issues that are very volatile in our nation today, and the feminist issue is one of them. And so I see now why God has led me into this particular thing, an interest in it, so that it gives us an entree as Christians in the non-Christian world, because it's seldom, usually, that Christians are that informed on issues that are impacting on the world as much as this one. And I say the world because you'll see that in a minute. And the first awareness that I had that some radical changes were taking place in our Christian world was when a friend of mine about 4 or 5 years ago told me that she was moving back to Denver, and she had received a teaching position at a university. And I said to her at that time, "And has your husband received an assignment somewhere here also, because he's a professional man?" And she said, "No, he'll be looking for a job." And I said, "Oh, then you're moving here because you got a job." And she said, "Yes, that's right." And then she informed me that they had an egalitarian marriage. Now, how many of you are familiar with that term? As far as I can see it in our context, it would be an equal authority marriage. Egalitarian. 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 And you see the word equal in there. And incidentally, their egalitarian marriage has been very rocky. She has had to revert back to a more biblical stance to survive in the marriage. But that is being taught in the Christian context today, and you will run into it more and more. The second thing that occurred not too long ago is a friend of mine who had considerable Bible background. I received information that she had become a practicing homosexual. I called her to confront her on the issue, and she said it's biblical. You see, culturally, at that time it was not acceptable to be a homosexual. Today it is culturally acceptable. And I said, "What do you do with Romans 1? And she said, "Oh, that was written to homosexuals who worship idols." You want to know about Sodom and Gomorrah? That was written, their judgment was against homosexual rape and inhospitality. Now, those are not minor issues today in the Christian's acceptance of homosexuality. There has been a book written on the subject, and I'll talk about it in a minute. When I pled with her to repent, she said, "If I discover I am wrong, I will commit suicide." But here's the clincher. She said she is leading other lesbians to Jesus Christ. And I said, "What Christ? My holy, pure Lord, you are leading homosexuals to?" there are many voices that we are hearing today on this issue. Moody Monthly reported on a recent Women and the Ministries conference. Have you heard about that? That was co-sponsored by Fuller Seminary last June. Some of the navigators wanted me to attend, and I was concerned that we not, as an organization, not be identified with this movement, and you'll see why. 95 workshops were... and the co-sponsoring was with the Evangelical Women's Caucus. Don't let that name fool you. 95 workshops were led by 50 men and women, many of whom called themselves biblical feminists. Some of the topics covered were women and the subordination in Scripture, the Holy Spirit as female, from hierarchy to equality, biblical feminism and changing the local church, and the last one is The Homosexual My Neighbor. Has any of you read that book? Have any of you? That book is written by two evangelical, highly educated women. One is Dr. Virginia Mollenkott, and the other is Letha Scanzoni. And in it, the issue I gave on Sodom and Gomorrah and Romans 1 is stated in there. They consider homosexuality cultural today. And even though they are not fully condoning it, they are saying we must reach out to the homosexual and allow them full opportunity in the Christian context. Dr. Virginia Mollenkott, and I quote her, says, "If homosexual behavior is neither sickness nor sin," note that, "which science is showing," not the Bible, but which science is showing, "we cannot expect healings. We have refused to build a theology of sexuality on Genesis 1 and 2. These are evangelical women impacting on our world. Christianity today in reporting on the same event, the same conference, quotes the leadership as saying, "We did not become feminists and then try to fit our Christianity into feminist ideology. We became feminists because we are Christians. We herald the feminist movement because we are convinced that the church has strayed from a correct understanding of God's will for women." Roberta Hestens, who is a professor at Fuller Seminary and an instructor of communications and education, says, "We are in this for keeps, for life, for eternity." That's a long time. They ended the conference with communion served by ordained women. These highly educated women, evangelical women, are not only influencing other women today, but men. Men led many of those workshops. And they are teaching the next group of seminarians. Bruce Lockerbie says, "Moreover, this is the mind that today informs our society and shapes the thinking and character of most men and women. Even those who are Christians are infected by the virus of secularism. Often even our bastions of Christian education have been infiltrated." Well, what has created this climate? Why in the past decade is such a radical shift taking place in women's thinking? Quite frankly, women have not had a fair shake, not only in Christendom, but even in the Navigators. And I'm not here to talk about that, but I want to show you graphically what I mean. Now, the feminist says that men and women are equal. There are only physiological differences. We are equal intellectually. We are equal in roles. They say that we have been trained when we were young to assume certain roles, but actually men and women are the same. Now, the anti-feminist, into which most of us would fall, historically has taken this position. Women are different, therefore inferior. Because if I asked even this group, how many of you feel that men are just a little bit more important than women? With all integrity, some of you would have to raise your hands, wouldn't you? Because every group I've ever asked it, men and women raise their hands. That has been the climate in Christendom for many centuries. I believe the biblical position is that we are different and equal. Different roles, different physiologically, different emotionally, and equal. Galatians 3:28. If any of you want to take issue with that, I'll let Jerry answer the questions on that. Galatians 3:28. Now here is my view, and I think a biblical view, of Genesis 1:28, where I think it's in 26 or in that area where God says, "Let us make man in our image." He made a man and female in the image of God, created he them. So it takes both men and women to reveal God's image equally. There can be no inferior portion of God's image. Equal representation, equal in value. Does anyone have a question? I shouldn't ask that, but does anyone have a question on that to this point? I wouldn't think so. Okay. Now, since 1923, women have sought for the passage of the Equal Rights Amendment, and this is what brings it into focus on the current issues. Since 1923, it is not a new amendment. In 1971, our Congress allowed 7 years for the ratification of the ERA by a two-thirds majority of the states. Now, many people say, what does the ERA say? And you're probably asking, what does the Equal Rights Amendment propose? And it really looks fairly innocent when you look at it. But the one that you must note, in addition to the number one, is number two. And I believe this is the only amendment that has been proposed that Congress enforce. They are asking the federal government, not the local government, to enforce it. Can you read it? Equality of rights under the law, section one, equality of rights under the law should not be denied or abridged by the United States or by any state on account of sex. Section two, the Congress shall have the power to enforce by appropriate legislation the provision of this article. And three, this amendment shall take effect 2 years after the date of ratification. Yes. You've asked a very key question, Dave, and I think we'll table that one. Do you? Yeah, it will impact. Yeah. So do ask it again. Okay, now I'd like to show you the states that have not yet ratified, because you may be in some of them. Just look at this first list. These are the 14 states or 15 states that have not yet ratified. Four states tried to rescind. You recall that? And they were denied the right to do that. Just this last week, this legislation went through. They were denied the right to do that. And as I understand it, the feminists are going to target these four states in the next 3.5 years to try to get them to ratify the ERA. And if you are in those states, you're going to feel the impact of that. The reason they picked these four is because the vote was the closest on a state level. Say again? These are these are all of the ones that have not yet ratified. But they are targeting these four. And you will understand the impact of that in a moment. Now, these liberal women have used every scheme possible. You're familiar with the time extension that just went through. I don't want to go into a lot of details if you're familiar with it. Okay. Yeah, that just went through while I was working on this, then I had to change the content. And, you know, they told us, man, that thing went through the House, but it's going to be stalled in the Senate. They're going to filibuster, they're going to fight that thing, they're going to kill it. That thing sailed through the Senate just like that. Yes?
On what basis were the states denied the right to rescind?
Can you believe that the Senate voted? That they could not rescind, but they could extend. And see, each one of these issues we have tried to get involved with, Jerry and I and some of us who have been informed on this. And there have not been enough conservative people speaking out. Jerry and I were in Washington the very tail end of last month at a conference, and we went to visit Senator Jackson, who is the Washington senator. And while we were standing in his office waiting to see Jackson, his secretary was counting mailgrams. And I said to her, what are these mailgrams about? And she said, I suspected. She said, they are in the ERA. And I said, are they for or against? And she said, oh, most of them are for. We get very few against. And what they have done is instructed their people to send in mailgrams every other day. They don't look at the names. They don't compute the names. They're just getting the same minority people, flooding them. And the legislators really believe that the majority of us in the U.S. want this. And that's why they voted it in. They want our votes. Besides, some of them are convinced that the ERA represents equal pay for equal work, protection of minorities, and all the good things that the Equal Rights Amendment has couched in it. However, the 14th Amendment takes care of that. You don't need this amendment. Do you have any other questions on this? Okay. Now, their plan has been to boycott the states that have not ratified the ERA. So they keep conventions out of the unratified states to the tune of millions of dollars. And I'll show you. I've got more papers here than you can believe. These are some of the organizations, I don't know if you can read them, that refuse to have conventions in unratified states. And that's the amount of money they have kept out of those states. Some of them have canceled reservations. And all of us have contributed one way or another to some of these organizations. National Council of Churches is on here. Goes on and on. Anyway, you can look at that list later if you like. I just wanted you to know I had it. Associated Press reported that at the end of just 1977... The ERA advocates claim the boycott had already cost certain cities such as Atlanta, Georgia, and Miami $60 to $90 million. The figure is now in the hundreds of millions. They almost bankrupted Illinois. Some states are suing. Christianity Today posed this question: what if this strategy works? If the ERA is passed because of lobbying by hotel people, then what? And one New York lawyer says the boycott threat will fundamentally alter the Constitution as we know it today. Well, what will it mean if the ERA is ratified? What is the philosophy behind it? The amendment looks innocent enough. I mean, when you looked at that amendment, there was nothing shocking unless you really look at it. What we need to understand is the intent of those who are pushing for equal rights. And it is a humanist philosophy. In 1933, the Humanist Manifesto was drafted and signed by many secular humanists, including John Dewey, who is the father of the current educational system, which is failing miserably. Now there is a Humanist Manifesto number 2. And the value of this book, in addition to his content, is that verbatim at the back of this booklet is, and it's called Weep for Your Children by Dr. Murray Norris. He has 13 of his own. He has the Humanist Manifesto number 2. And you will be seeing it, portions of it, in a moment. This document sets forth the philosophy and the objectives of humanism. The following will be a comparison between the Humanist Manifesto and the feminist philosophy. Now, I didn't have time to make this a beautifully documented thing, but you will get the picture of this as we put it out here. And I'm going to start by just showing one at a time. Now, the Humanist Manifesto, and these are direct quotes, say, "We deplore the division on nationalistic grounds. We have reached a turning point in human history." Why am I reading from that one? I can't even see it. Just a sec. Let me read from this one. "Where the best option is to transcend the limits of national sovereignty and to move toward the building of a world community in which all sectors of the human family can participate. Thus, we look to the development of a system of world law and a world order based on transnational federal government." Now, the feminists say overthrowing capitalism is... This is Gloria Steinem, who is one of the leaders of feminism. She is the editor of Ms. Magazine, which is their basic organ, and a member of NOW, which is the National Organization of Women. "Overthrowing capitalism is too small for us. We must overthrow the whole blank patriarchy. Feminism is the path to humanism, and humanism is the goal." One thing about feminists and communists is they tell you what they are doing. Now, where this impacts on us, one of the areas, is our tax exemption status. They are out to get us. And this is the basis. We can lose our tax exemption status if we refuse equal opportunity to women, to homosexuals, in the Navigators. In Eugene, Oregon, a couple of years ago, some of the feminists talked to a member of Campus Crusade staff, a male, and I must have asked him something about women's opportunities in Campus Crusade. From his answer, they were working toward throwing Campus Crusade off that campus. And a young Navigator contact staff a couple of weeks ago said to me, "Remember, the Navigators is basically a men's organization. If we communicate that outward, we can be in serious trouble in the future, with or without the Equal Rights Amendment, gentlemen, because these livers are militant." The second area is in the military. Women want equal status in the military, and that means women in combat. And General Westmoreland addressed our conference in Washington, and he said, "Women in combat are untested." He could not envision women enduring what some of you men have endured in Vietnam and World War II. But they want women in combat. Now, this is the interesting thing. They have, the humanists, have been decreed by our Supreme Court to be a religion, and they have tax-exempt status. They are also doves. They are against war. their children, their daughters, can become conscientious objectors while your daughters go to war. That's the interesting aspect of that. Let me quote you from this book, which is written by a friend of mine, Rosemary Thompson. It's called The Price of Liberty. She is a spokesman for the Eagle Forum and is often invited by TV and radio to debate libbers. And she says, a university professor had been even more bold. She freely admitted while our TV talk show was still on the air that churches should lose their tax-exempt status if they refuse to ordain women. This attack on denominations which condone so-called sexism is the national policy of NOW, which is the National Organization of Women. In addition, feminists demand that homosexuals and lesbians be given equal rights to ordination in order for churches to retain special tax advantage. I had 30 of these books. I'm down to 4 of them. I've got 2 for this workshop. Excellent book. It will inform you on many. How are women being conditioned to accept anti-feminism, anti-family principles, and so forth? And she was the name of it is The Price of Liberty, and it will be available in your bookstores in November. But this was the first run, and there were only 5,000 copies. Rosemary Thompson. She's an evangelical Christian and quite a rabid anti-liber. I don't know that it's necessary with this group, but I was going to go through and show you what the Bible says on some of these things. But I think for the sake of time, Jerry, I may not. Or do you want me to?
I would suggest, I think getting the references would be fine. And be sure we get into some of the issues of how this will affect our evangelistic program.
Yeah, we'll do that in the end.
Yeah.
But what I had for this particular portion, for instance, is 2 Peter 2:10. Now, 2 Peter 2 is a tremendous document in what will happen to these people and what they are like. And it says in 2 Peter 2:10, this is especially true of those who yield to fleshly desires, indulge in polluting passions, and despise authority. Bold, headstrong as they are, they have no qualms at libeling glorious beings and so forth. But they are against authority in government, in our government, so they can set up their own. Okay. Now, these are all topicalized. The second one is on religion. This is what the Humanist Manifesto says on religion. We believe, however, that traditional dogmatic or authoritarian religions that place revelation, God, ritual, or creed above human needs and experience do a disservice to the human species. We find insufficient evidence for belief in the existence of a supernatural. It is either meaningless or irrelevant to the question of the survival and fulfillment of the human race. As non-theists, we begin with humans, not God, nature, not deity. Our entire educational system is infiltrated with this philosophy. We'll get into that in a minute. Okay. On religion, the feminist says, no deity will save us. We must save ourselves. Promises of immortal salvation or fear of eternal damnation are both illusory and harmful. By the year 2000, we will, I hope, raise our children to believe in human potential, not God. Gloria Steinem again, Ms. Magazine. Now, they have a document called the Declaration of Feminism. I have portions of it, but not the total thing. But all history must be rewritten in terms of the oppression of women. We must go back to ancient female religions like witchcraft, and haven't they? They are currently infiltrating. Of course, the Bible says, the fool is said in his heart, there is no God. Have you had enough yet? This one is on society. At the present juncture of history, commitment to all humankind is the highest commitment of which we are capable. It transcends the narrow allegiances of church, state, party, class, or race in moving toward a wider vision of human potentiality. What more daring a goal for humankind than for each person to become, in ideal as well as practice, a citizen of the world community? We are concerned for the welfare of the aged, the infirm, the handicapped, and addicts. Doesn't that sound good? For all who are neglected or ignored by society. It also includes, of course, the recognition of an individual's right to die with dignity, euthanasia, and the right to suicide. That's taken care of, isn't it? Now, Malcolm Muggeridge says in Christianity Today, The Germans were also convicted of infringing human rights by the practice of compulsory sterilization and euthanasia, whose legalization is now being recommended in Western countries on humanitarian and compassionate grounds. Thus, it has taken just 30 years to translate a war crime into an exercise in humanity and reinforcement of human rights. Now, this is a mind blower. Are any of you familiar with what the nuclear family is? That's your family. The nuclear family is slowly disintegrating. It must be replaced with a new form of family where individuals live and work together to help meet the needs of all people in the society. Marriage has existed for the benefit of men and has been a legally sanctioned method of control over women. The end of the institution of marriage is a necessary condition for the liberation of women. Therefore, it is important for us to encourage women to leave their husbands and not to live with men individually. We now know it is the institution that has failed us, and we must work to destroy it. We really don't know how to raise children. They're going to tell you how to do that. If we want to talk about equality of opportunity for children, then the fact that children are raised in families means there's no equality. In order to raise children with equality, we must take them away from families and communally raise them. That is their intent. And if you don't think this is impacting on all of us eventually, if not currently, it is. Last year was the year of the woman, International Women's Year. 1980 is the year of the child, and they are out for the liberation of the child. And we have data on that for all of you free, and then you can get more later. On sexuality, we believe that intolerant attitudes often cultivated by orthodox religions and puritanical cultures unduly repress sexual conduct. The right to birth control, abortion, and divorce should be recognized. While we do not approve of exploitive, denigrating forms of sexual expression, neither do we wish to prohibit, by law or social sanction, sexual behavior between consenting adults. The many varieties of sexual exploration should not in themselves be considered evil. Of course not. The feminist. The National Organization of Now endorses the principle that it is the basic right of every woman to control her reproductive life and therefore supports the furthering of the sexual revolution. I'm sure that you are aware that we aborted 1 million babies last year alone. By pressing for widespread sex education, provision for birth control information and contraceptives, and the repeal of all laws restricting abortion, contraception, and sexual activity between consenting adults in private. Revolution, tomorrow is now. And then from their document of feminism, the freedom to choose heterosexuality, homosexuality, bisexuality, or asexuality, but not be bound by them. And 2 Peter, it's hard not to want to read from that portion, but it says, 2 Peter 2, revelry during the day is their idea of enjoyment. They are foul blots and blemishes that revel in their lusts as they stuff themselves at your table. They have eyes full of adultery, and their appetite for sin is never satisfied. And here are some scriptures on that. Pardon me?
Leave it up there.
Well, as I say, these are not... The one in Psalm 139 and Jeremiah 1 is on the fact that they're claiming a fetus is not alive until the 24th week. Jesus says before the foundation of the world, he put our members together. I think this issue of abortion... For the purposes of the tape. I don't even know what they're on, Jerry, but I will. Exodus 20:13. Is that thou shalt not kill, I think. Galatians 5:19-21. Romans 1, and this is on homosexuality, 18-32. Psalm 139:13-16. Jeremiah 1:4-5. And Isaiah 49:5. On education. We believe in the right to universal education. Everyone has a right to the cultural opportunity to fulfill his or her unique capacities and talents. The school should foster satisfying and productive living. Innovative and experimental forms of education are to be welcomed. Now, in this booklet, Weep for Your Children, he explains values clarification, MACOS, and some of these experimental forms of education that have been very influential in changing the thinking of children in public schools. And you'd have to read it because time wouldn't allow to cover it. But I just want to show you one way they are interpreting this experimenting thing, and it's dealing primarily in this instance with homosexuality. Gene O'Leary is the co-director or president or whatever of the National Gay Task Force. This is on lesbians in the school, a paper that she has written. Students will thus be encouraged to explore alternate lifestyles, including lesbianism. Now, under counseling, school counselors should be required to take courses in human sexuality in which a comprehensive and positive view of lesbianism is presented. Lesbians as well as heterosexual counselors should be represented on the guidance staff. Now, they are already at work with this. They're not waiting for the ERA to be passed. Yes. Okay. Thank you. In San Francisco, it's already being taught in the schools. In Denver, a father discovered homosexual literature in his son's room. And he asked him how long he'd had it and where he got it. And he got it from his teacher in high school. And these two teachers, I understand, were noted two male teachers walking hand in hand down the corridors of the school. And the principal, with the principal's full knowledge. Schools should set up lesbian study programs in connection with women's study programs to foster pride in the adolescent lesbian and to show heterosexual students that lesbians have made significant contributions to society. Lesbian clubs should be established in the schools. Now, if this happens, you know that during the puberty period, boys and girls are more inclined toward their own sex. If they get locked into a homosexual or lesbian position and they join these clubs and go public, how would they ever reverse that? They want your children. They cannot reproduce their own. Our children, this is a quote from Weep for Your Children, our children who have gone through public schools without receiving religious instruction are wide open to the blandishments of the parent-hating cults like Children of God. It also appears to me that our children become involved in alcohol, drugs, sex, and sex perversions, even in Satanism, because of the lack of a firm religious background and the promotion of humanists in our schools, our media, and other places that provide input for the growing children of the nation. Dr. Murray Norris. Are you sufficiently shocked? And here's some scriptures if you want to jot them down. Well, how does the humanist philosophy impact on the community ministry? All non-Christians are not radicals. They are not all humanists. Many are as uninformed as we are. But their values, their morality, knowingly or unknowingly, has been conditioned by the humanist philosophy which has been taught. Remember, the humanists have gotten God out of the public schools. And they have infiltrated the public schools with the humanist philosophy. In order to speak, to show you what is going on in the thinking of women, we took a survey, not only on campus, but also in the community. We went to shopping centers and took a survey on some of the ERA issues. And I thought you might be interested in the results of this, to show you the thinking of women that are now coming out of college into your community. The first question, pardon me? We did this in Washington, on Washington State primarily. Number one, how would the passage of the ERA affect your lifestyle? 39 said good, 13 said bad, 28 said indifferent. Two, how do you view abortion? 11 said absolutely unacceptable. That's how few said it was unacceptable. 22 said acceptable when the mother's life is endangered. And 40, it should be available to everyone. Do you think this is going to impact on your life and the life of your children? and your ministry? If you discover your child's teacher is a practicing homosexual, would you be supportive, indifferent, or angered? 12 said supportive, 35 said indifferent, and 26 said angered. Look at the figure of indifference. 4, would you be in favor of a law allowing two consenting adults to engage in any sexual activity? 39 said yes, 29 said yes, 34 said no, and 10 said maybe. There were 73 that we polled. And then the final one, do you think Christianity has any significant answers to these issues? Comfortingly, 52 said yes, and 21 said no. But the very fact that 52 said yes gives us an entree, doesn't it? The way we used this on the campus was we asked another question. Would you be interested in investigating the scriptures on this topic? In our evangelism, yes.
Those were all women?
Yes, we did a couple of men, and then I said to the girls, let us not poll men. And the men would have given an equivalent attitude. There is no difference. But the thing that's interesting is many who are for the ERA, well, you can see the infiltration of the thinking. There's just no point. I don't need to analyze this for you. But some who are against abortion were for the ERA because they have not connected homosexuality, abortion, and all of that with the ERA. That was the interesting thing that we came up with. But see, we may think these things are happening in a corner. They are going to totally revolutionize our lifestyles. Betty White, who is on our campus in Arizona, wrote to me and said, we are witnessing to a girl who is a rabid liberal. And 2.5 weeks later, she called me and said this woman had come to Christ. This college student had come to Christ. So I said, would you send me a write-up so I could use it as an illustration of a liberal's thinking in this group? And she said her response was that she must relate to God as a woman, that is, a woman being God, female God. Her past was that she was on drugs, she had been married, she had been beaten, and then ultimately bringing her here to see the love of the saints had changed her. But that was her background. This is a college student. What she dreams of now that she's a Christian, is a Bible that's reworded so that all mankinds are humankinds, and it's people instead of men, and references to he or him would be changed if not speaking of someone specifically. She thinks men just don't know that they're biased, and most women don't realize their plight either. They just need to be educated. She was in the march on Washington for ERA and is still very much for it. You see, the job that we have in our follow-up is not just to teach the Bible. We're going to have to help this young woman turn her whole orientation around. She has been mistreated by men, and she is still obviously angry. That is the one thing that I have noticed that your feminist has in common, is the majority of them are angry women. Now, when you are angry, you or I are angry, have you noticed that there are certain responses to life? To the Christians in particular, we have no peace. They have no peace. You do not feel loved. They do not feel loved. They need forgiveness. We need forgiveness. They need joy. That is what to go for. That is the open nerve in witnessing to a feminist or even a man who may be influenced by this. I was talking to my new dental hygienist. I had just come in and needed to have my teeth fixed, and this very attractive girl was working on my teeth. And she said to me, what do you do for a living? So I have a little canned answer that includes the fact that I'm involved in evangelism and so forth. We want to make a permanent difference in the world. I got that from the front of the log, and I thought it was a very good way to explain what we do, briefly. And usually when you say that to a non-Christian, they back off and say, oh, yes. She said, where do you do this? And tell me more about it. And she kept leaning into the conversation. So I said, well, what are you doing for lunch? It was 11:30, and she said, would you like to go to lunch with me? She took me to lunch. I covered the entire gospel with her, Her background was Lutheran. She said, I understand the issues. I am not quite ready to make the decision, but I would like to investigate it. So I invited her to attend one of our Bible studies on campus, because she also was in that area. I sent her a Bible study and John Stott's little book on becoming a Christian. A week and a half later, I had dinner with her. And just as the food was served, I said to her, now, where are you on your decision as far as becoming a Christian is concerned? And she said, I made it last Friday. And I said, well, then let's pray over our food. But the important thing was, she told me that she is now off the pill. I wasn't interested in vying with her on her morality. The thing that came across to me was her disillusionment with life, her guilt. And I spoke to those issues in witnessing to her, not to the moral issues or the ERA or any of that. And so in our witnessing, look for what Leroy calls the open nerve. If we start locking in on them on the ERA, we're going to lose. That's why I would not discuss the ERA with non-Christians until I had presented Jesus Christ from a biblical viewpoint. Then, as we sat around, these girls at the sorority came around me for the discussion on the ERA. And every issue, whether it was abortion or whatever it was, I opened the Bible and said, the Bible says. My opinion is no more valuable than their opinion. But the Bible has a whole lot to say on every one of these issues. And because I had warmed them up with Jesus' attitude toward women and his desire to liberate women, which is a very important issue today, they were able to listen to what the Bible had to say on abortion, on homosexuality, and so forth. So in our witnessing, these are very key approaches. Women who have homosexual problems anticipate your, and men anticipate your rejection. They'll tell you, and then they wait for the reaction. They need to be loved and accepted and offered the opportunity for salvation, just like anyone else, even though by nature we are repulsed by these issues. But they desperately need forgiveness, peace, joy, and everything that we have. As you counsel your... I'm just giving you briefly what I think the issues are in your community involvements. But you will be counseling women and men. Women who are angry with their husbands because the husband takes the authoritarian position. And if on that first frame, as I showed you, the man feels the woman is inferior because she is a woman, that's the beginning of their problems. And if he is particularly authoritarian and she has been infiltrated by the feminist thinking, you have to go where she is in order to reach her. And if she thinks you're lining up with the husband and you shout at her, submit woman, because the Bible says so, you will lose her. See, the Christian women, navigator wives, have been influenced by the ERA and by the humanist thinking, and some of them have even told me, one woman said to me, why do I have to wait? Why do I have to go as soon as my husband says, let's go? Why doesn't he wait for me to finish talking, say, at church? Interesting thought, isn't it, gentlemen? Why indeed? Okay, in Weep for Your Children, the writer... He says, the writer is affirming the fact that not only are our philosophers, our scientists, our psychiatrists part of the humanist camp or trained in its philosophies, but our public schools and Christian schools as well are shaping students in the humanist mold. So the conclusion is, historically, navigators and most Christians have maintained a primarily non-involvement stance in politics, government, or education. My interest was stirred just about a year ago in this topic. And my concern is that while we are busy with our primary calling, that of reaching the lost, we are rapidly losing the opportunity to do so through legislation that is being enacted by the humanists, which would deny us our equal rights. So that is the end of the presentation part, Jerry, and I'd like you... And now, Jerry, maybe you want to talk about the Year of the Child.
Great. Colleen, why don't you get a little chair and pull it up here, and then so I can hand you the mic when questions come up. Okay, now Colleen has just given you a portion of the material that she has and also the knowledge that she has on some of the issues. But I think I would like to just add a brief addendum. I always vacillate back and forth between how involved to get where. You know, you can get involved in many, many things. And there are many times that I have to distinguish between my responsibilities as a private citizen, my responsibilities as a navigator, and an employed person in a sense, and a calling to the ministry, and my responsibilities as a Christian. And I think each of us have to grapple with that issue, but regardless of what stance you may take, none of us have an excuse for being uninformed people. For one thing, there are many issues that we are really going to encounter very strongly, and Noel could probably fill this entire hour with his experience in Scandinavia, couldn't you, Noel? I mean, we're 95 to 100%. I mean, you just assume that there has been sexual immorality, and I don't know about how is the homosexual thing? Is that a big deal? Strong. And so you see the end result of what you must deal with. And in fact, Noel, if you have any particular comments that you'd like to make on this at some point, why don't you just think about that? And I'd like to have you just make some offhand comments as to what the end result is, because, of course, they have gone, the extra mile in this area. I think I just want to say that when we start getting into marriages, that we are going to find problems, because it is coming like this. The churches are going to have to make decisions on missionaries. In fact, ours did decide to stop supporting one because of their propagation of egalitarian marriage. I had to be in on the interview as an elder, and we decided to withdraw our support. And it was a very difficult thing because they're very, very fine evangelists. And it wasn't just that. There were a couple other issues relating to the gospel, but it was one of the key ones. And the way it came out was that in the pastor's premarital counseling, there's just a normal questionnaire that they give out, and then they start doing it. All of a sudden, everybody who came from there was coming at it with a totally different view of marriage than the person who that they had normally been taught in that regard. Question, yes.
Was that basically the removal of roles?
Okay, egalitarian is there's a removal of roles, there is co-equality, there is they submit to one another. It deals with the issues of Ephesians 5 and says it's totally mutual submission. Now, the problem we have is there is an amount of truth to some of that. I mean, I think we have overdone many things. I think the church has been very guilty in many ways in suppressing women to a degree that is probably not biblical. And we just need to be cautious that we don't reject everything and throw the baby out with the bathwater. Let's come into a balanced biblical viewpoint. Yes, Gary?
All extremes, even to the point of
keeping
both names.
Okay. Yes, keeping, the question is the extremes of the egalitarian, keeping individual names, etc. Yes, that is. That we didn't run into that.
Hyphenated
names. Yeah. Now, on that, I'm not sure that I can't say anything about biblically. You can call anybody any name you want, in a sense, but it is it's a revealing of the attitude Shalene may not agree totally with that. It's a surface thing that results from a basic problem inside as to their view of marriage and a declaration of one's independence from any authority. Yeah, and so that would be it. Yes. Is it a Jewish position?
Jewish position.
Oh, a Jewett. Yes, yes. From what we know, it is. Right. Okay. Yeah, Jewett at Fuller. Now, let me just make one other comment, is that there have been things legislatively being pushed for several years regarding to children. Now, you do run into a lot of scare literature in the evangelical community and stuff that, you try and track it down, it's hard. So you've got to take a balance on the thing and say, well, it may be more scare than whatever, but just like you run into it on both sides, but be sure you get to germs of truth in the process. This year, there will be a significant legislative push. Our experience with the International Year of the Woman last year was something that you want to be sure to take note of. It will happen this year regarding children. Okay, and so here is the declaration. The International Year of the Child, the U.S. Commission, will get its funds from executive departments of government. Senator Jesse Helms introduced and passed yesterday, I don't know what date this was, an amendment, pardon me? Okay, this was 3 weeks ago then, or a month ago almost now. Passed yesterday an amendment to House Resolution 12929 forbidding any funds for IYC use. And then it says, the libs are in a tizzy, parentheses, some same ones want to control use of IYC, International Year of the Child monies, as did the IWY funds. And you can contact Senator Helms' office, and just the address of the Senate's office building. Okay, forget it. Yeah, just write to your congressman if you have some concern. The problem when you do things like this, legislation is many layered. Like the tax bill that just went through, there's stuff in there that most of the, I heard an interview, and one of the lobbyists says most of the congressmen don't even know what was passed. You know, they're just stuff slid in all over the place. Okay, let's stop there. That's enough said on that. Let's go to specific questions and about what has been said or what we should extend. Yes.
That yellow sheet there will tell you about the Year of the Child. Okay. So every one of you can have a free copy of that.
Okay, questions. Yes, Daryl.
Well, the observation, you see the beginning of that in terms of even what we'll see a lot of opportunities in 78 and 79. We're going to take the difficult issue, which is on child abuse. And we're going to lay a foundation, consider laying the foundation for that by taking the worst part of it.
Right. If you highlight child abuse, which is a very commendable thing, but the implications long term, it says that the family or even the city and state cannot handle the problem, but the federal government must and legislate against it. And that's just a basic, the conceptual thing. Okay, some other questions? Okay. I'll ask Helene to give a rundown on just a few highlights of the International Year of the Woman, how it developed, and what some problems were as it developed.